Are you ready to revolutionize your livestock management with virtual fencing? eShepherd is the virtual fencing solution by Gallagher that makes managing your cowherd easier, more efficient, and stress-free. Imagine adjusting grazing boundaries in minutes, all from your phone. With eShepherd's intuitive app, you can monitor livestock and track each individual cow or heifer. As one customer said, "With eShepherd, I can guide my herd without the stress. It's like having an extra pair of hands. Save time, save money, and improve animal welfare with virtual fencing. It's smarter, simpler herd management designed for today's dairy and beef producers. Visit tryvirtualfencing.com to learn more and see how it works. Take control of your grazing strategy with virtual fencing today." Welcome to the Moose Room. Brad here again today. Actually, I'm off, having a little R&R, rest and relaxation today. And we have some special guest hosts, and they wanted to cover one of the research projects that we did here on cow culling and reasons for culling of cows in one of our university herds. So we compared Holsteins and our crossbred cows and actually looked at culling over 15 years worth of data. And I thought it would be kind of neat to have a few guest hosts talk about some of our research one episode and see how that goes. So take it away.
All right. So someone sent us this research paper on dairy cow culling and wants to know kind of what it all means, you know, for the industry.
Yeah.
It's a pretty in-depth study from the University of Minnesota.
Oh, wow.
It's from 2024, so it's pretty new.
Mm-hmm.
And they've got like 14 years of data.
Wow.
Comparing Holsteins and crossbred cows.
Okay.
This is like real world stuff, not just theory.
No, you hit the nail on the head.
Yeah.
Culling decisions are a huge factor
for sure
for any dairy farmer.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we're not still talking about getting rid of unproductive cows.
Right. Mm.
This has a direct impact on the farm's bottom line.
Yeah.
And this study could offer some valuable insights.
Absolutely. One of the things that just jumped out at me right away was, you know, that culled dairy cows actually make up a pretty significant portion of the U.S. beef market.
Interesting.
Like something like 10%.
Wow.
Did you know?
I did not. That's pretty significant.
Yeah, it's bigger than you think.
It's a hidden connection I think most people don't realize.
Yeah.
Cull cow value is a legit revenue stream for dairy farms.
Right.
So the more we understand what influences that value, the better.
Exactly.
And that's where this study gets really interesting.
Okay, so let's dive into some of the findings.
Right.
So they really break down the reasons why cows are culled.
Okay.
And across all the breeds, the number one reason was poor reproduction.
Yeah.
44.4%.
Oh.
That's almost half the herd.
That's huge.
Mastitis came in second at 18%.
Okay.
And those numbers are actually higher than the national averages.
Interesting.
So that made me wonder if there's something specific about this herd that's driving those higher rates.
That's a great observation.
Yeah.
And the study offers some clues.
Okay.
This particular herd used seasonal calving practices.
Okay.
Which means all the cows give birth within a specific window of time. And that can sometimes lead to higher rates of reproductive issues.
Interesting.
Compared to herds that calve year round.
So it's not necessarily that the cows themselves are less fertile.
Exactly.
It could be a management factor.
Exactly.
That makes sense.
And there's another interesting detail.
Okay.
This was a primarily grazing-based herd.
Okay.
Now, grazing can be great for cow welfare and bulk quality.
Mm-hmm.
But it also potentially exposes cows to more environmental pathogens.
Oh.
And that could explain the higher rate of mastitis.
Okay.
Which often leads to culling.
That's interesting because it suggests that there might be a trade-off.
Right.
You know, grazing could have some benefits, but it might also come with this higher risk of mastitis.
Yeah.
So it makes you wonder how farmers weigh those.
It's a balancing act for sure.
Yeah.
And speaking of unexpected findings.
Okay.
This study found that crossbred cows were actually more likely to die on the farm compared to Holsteins.
I wouldn't have guessed that.
Yeah, that was a bit of a head scratcher.
Yeah.
It's hard to say for sure based on this one study.
Right.
It could have to do with the specific herd composition, management practices, or even just random chance.
Yeah.
It definitely highlights that there's always more to learn.
Uh-huh.
And sometimes the results can challenge our assumptions.
Yeah, for sure.
This is definitely an area where more research would be helpful. But let's get to what you were really interested in.
Yes.
The cull value itself.
Yes.
What makes a culled cow more valuable?
That's the million-dollar question.
Well, this study found that, on average, crossbred cows tended to fetch higher prices than their Holstein counterparts.
Interesting.
Especially those sired by Normandy bulls.
Okay.
Now, why might that be?
Is it because they produce more milk?
That's a common misconception.
Oh.
But actually, milk production doesn't directly affect cull cow value. It's more about what those cows bring to the beef market.
Oh, okay.
Think about it. Mm. When a dairy cow is culled, she's essentially entering the beef supply chain.
So her value is determined by factors that are important for beef production.
Exactly.
Like how much meat she'll yield.
Exactly.
Okay.
And this is where those Normandy-sired crossbreds might have an advantage.
Okay.
Now, we need to be careful about drawing broad conclusions from a single study.
Right.
But Normand cattle are known for having good muscling.
Okay.
And conformation.
Uh-huh.
Which are desirable traits in the beef industry.
So those Normandy genes are like a hidden bonus.
Yeah.
A farmer might be focused on milk production,
right?
But those genetics are adding value on the back end.
That's a great way to put it.
When it comes time to cull.
And if we connect this to other research mentioned in the study, it gets even more intriguing.
Okay.
Crossbreds often have lower cull rates overall,
uh-huh.
thanks to things like better fertility and longer lifespans. So fewer cows leaving the herd early.
Right.
And the ones that do go for more.
Yeah.
That's a potential win-win scenario for profitability over a cow's lifetime.
This is really making me rethink how I view dairy cows.
Right.
It's not just about milk anymore.
It's about the whole picture.
Yeah. It's about the whole picture from birth to. Well, not retirement, but you know what I mean.
Right.
Yeah.
It's about recognizing the full potential of these animals.
Uh-huh.
And how their genetics can contribute to multiple aspects of the food system.
Now, this study looked at data over a 14-year period.
Okay.
And there's one more finding that I think is really important for farmers to understand.
Right.
Cull values can fluctuate quite a bit over time.
Okay.
For example, they peaked in 2014, but then hit a low point in 2020.
Yeah.
I'm guessing the COVID-19 pandemic had something to do with that.
Almost certainly played a role.
Yeah.
The pandemic disrupted everything, including the beef industry.
Yeah.
We saw processing plant closures, supply chain bottlenecks.
Yeah.
And shifting consumer demand.
Wow.
All of those factors can impact the price of beef.
Right.
Including cull cow value.
So even if a farmer is making smart decisions.
Right.
About breeding and culling.
Mm-hmm.
Those external factors can really throw a wrench in the works.
For sure.
It's a good reminder that there's always an element of unpredictability in agriculture.
Absolutely.
Yeah, absolutely.
So we've established that, like, those external factors can really shake things up.
Absolutely.
Like a global pandemic.
Right. Wow.
But what about the cow herself?
Right.
Does her breed actually impact how much she's worth?
Yeah.
When it comes time to cull?
That's a great question.
Yeah.
And this study really dug into that.
Okay.
Breaking down the cull value by breed.
Okay.
They actually looked at several different groups.
Good.
Which I know can sound a bit jargony, but stick with me because it gets interesting.
Okay.
They had purebred Holsteins.
A control group of Holsteins with genetics from way back in 1964.
Wow.
And then two different types of crossbred cows, each with three breeds mixed in.
Okay.
The researchers specifically chose these combinations because they're becoming more popular in the dairy industry.
Okay.
And represent different breeding strategies.
Okay, so lots of different cows to keep track of.
Yeah.
Let's start with the purebred Holsteins.
All right.
How did they measure up in terms of cull value?
Well, surprisingly, they actually had the lowest average cull value.
Really?
Out of all the groups.
Wow.
Coming in at around $730.
Okay.
And here's the kicker.
Okay.
Even though they had the highest body weight at culling.
Okay.
Their price per kilogram was still lower than the crossbreds.
Interesting.
So bigger didn't necessarily mean better in this case.
That's really interesting. I guess weight isn't everything when it comes to beef.
Not necessarily.
What about those 1964 Holsteins?
Okay.
What was the deal with them?
Remember how I mentioned those were a control group?
Yeah.
Well, their results were pretty fascinating.
Okay.
They actually had the highest average cull value.
Oh, wow.
Over $800.
Wow.
Now, there's a bit of a caveat here.
Okay.
A portion of those cows were sold to another research herd.
Okay.
which might have inflated their average a bit.
Ah, so it's like selling a vintage car to a collector.
That's a great analogy.
Yeah.
You're going to get a premium price because they're specifically looking for those older genetics.
Right.
But even if we remove those specialized sales from the equation,
okay,
those 1964 Holsteins still outperform the modern Holsteins.
Interesting.
This suggests that there might be something about those older genetics.
Yeah.
Maybe something related to meat quality or carcass yield.
Okay.
That contributes to a higher cull value.
Interesting.
It's something breeders might want to consider.
Right.
As they make decisions about future breeding programs.
It's like those 1964 Holsteins are whispering secrets from the past.
Yeah.
About what makes a valuable beef cow. So what about those crossbred groups? Mm-hmm. I know they had some pretty interesting results, especially those Normandy-sired cows.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Let's start with the first crossbred group.
Okay.
Which had a mix of Montbéliard,
okay,
Holstein,
mm-hmm,
and Viking Red genetics.
Okay.
They landed right in the middle.
Okay.
With an average cull value higher than the purebred Holsteins.
Okay.
But not quite as high as those 1964 genetics.
Right.
But here's where it gets really interesting.
Okay.
Within that group, the cows sired by Montbéliard or Viking Red bulls.
Okay.
Fetched a better price than those sired by Holstein bulls.
So even within a crossbred group, the specific sire breed can make a difference.
Exactly.
Okay. I'm ready for the Normand results.
All right.
Tell me they lived up to the hype.
They did not disappoint.
Okay.
The second crossbred group included Normand Jersey,
mm-hmm,
and Viking Red genetics.
Okay.
Now, their overall average cull value was similar to the first crossbred group. But when you break it down by sire breed.
Yeah.
Those Normandy-sired crossbreds were the stars of the show.
Okay.
They consistently had a higher cull value than the Jersey-sired ones.
Okay.
And they were bringing in a significant premium compared to those purebred Holsteins.
Wow.
Something like $70 more per cow.
So if a farmer is looking to maximize their cull cow revenue, focusing on crossbreeding, especially with Normandy influence, seems like a pretty solid strategy based on this study.
It's definitely something to consider.
Yeah.
But remember, this was just one study, and more research is needed to confirm these trends across different herds and management systems.
Oh, of course.
But the results are definitely intriguing.
I'm starting to see a pattern here.
Okay.
It seems like the more we learn about culling, the more complex it gets.
It's definitely not as simple as just getting rid of unproductive cows.
Right.
It's about understanding the interplay of genetics, management, and market forces.
Okay, so we've talked about breed and those external factors, like the pandemic.
Yeah.
But this study also looked at cull value over time.
Okay.
And at different stages of a cow's lactation cycle, right?
Exactly.
I'm guessing that adds another layer of complexity.
You guessed it.
Yeah.
And it brings up a key question for dairy farmers.
Okay.
How can you anticipate those fluctuations?
Right.
And make informed decisions about when to cull?
That's the question, isn't it?
Well, the study found that cull value tends to peak in certain months, usually around late spring and early summer.
Why would that be?
It's partly that.
Okay.
But it's also tied to seasonal calving patterns.
Okay.
Remember how we talked about that earlier?
Yeah.
Well, a lot of dairy farms have their cows calve in the spring.
Right.
Which means there's a natural cycle of culling as cows reach the end of their lactation period.
Right.
And since demand for beef often increases during the grilling season.
Okay.
Those two factors can align to create higher cull values.
So it's like hitting the sweet spot.
Exactly.
You've got a surplus of cows coming off their lactation.
Right.
And you've got consumers firing up their grills.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But of course, it's not always that predictable.
Right.
As we saw with the pandemic.
Of course.
Yeah. External factors can really throw things off.
Right. So let's say a farmer is keeping track of these market trends and trying to time their culling decisions strategically.
Right.
What about the cow stage of lactation?
Right.
Does that matter?
It absolutely does.
Okay.
The study found that cull values generally increase as a cow progresses through her lactation cycle.
Interesting.
This makes sense because as she gets further along, she's had more time to recover from calving.
Okay.
Put on weight.
Uh-huh.
And potentially improve her body condition.
So it's not just about age.
Right.
It's about where she is in her lactation cycle.
Exactly.
That's a really important nuance for farmers to understand.
It highlights the importance of individualized culling decisions.
Right.
There's no one-size-fits-all approach.
Yeah.
You have to consider each cow's specific circumstances.
Right.
Her health. a production history, and the current market conditions.
Okay, so we've covered a lot of ground here.
We have.
Breed, market trends, lactation stage.
Yeah.
It seems like there's a lot for farmers to juggle.
It is.
When it comes to culling.
A lot of factors.
But I'm also sensing a bigger picture emerging here.
I agree.
Yeah.
This deep dive into culling is really challenging.
Yeah.
The traditional view of dairy cows. Mm. We're starting to see them not just as milk producers.
Right.
But also as valuable contributors to the beef industry.
Yeah.
And as the demand for beef continues to grow.
Yeah.
This dual role is likely to become even more important.
Right.
Which raises a fascinating question.
Okay, I'm on the edge of my seat.
Lay it on me.
Yeah.
What if this shift in perspective leads to a fundamental change in the way we breed and manage dairy cows?
Whoa.
What if we start to see
A
greater emphasis on beef traits
In
dairy breeds?
Whoa, that's a pretty radical idea.
It is.
Like, we could see dairy cows that look more like beef cows.
It's a possibility.
Wow.
But there are other options as well. For example, There's a growing interest in what are called dual-purpose breeds.
Okay.
That excel in both milk and beef production.
Oh.
These breeds offer a potential win-win scenario.
Okay.
Allowing farmers to diversify their income streams.
Right.
And potentially tap into a more premium market for their beef.
That's fascinating.
It is.
So instead of specializing in either milk or beef,
right,
I could have a cow that's a rock star in both arenas.
Exactly.
But wouldn't that require a major shift in the dairy industry?
It would.
Like, how would farmers manage those different production goals?
That's a great question.
Yeah.
The one that we'll delve into in the final part of our deep dive.
Okay.
We'll explore the potential implications of these evolving trends.
All right.
What they might mean for the future of dairy farming.
Can't wait.
But before we do that, I'm curious, listener.
Yeah.
What are your thoughts so far?
Yeah.
Are you seeing your own herd in a new light?
Mm-mm.
Are you starting to think about the potential of those cull cows?
Right.
In a whole new way?
It's amazing to think that this whole conversation started with a single research paper on culling.
Yeah.
We've gone from the nitty-gritty details of a Minnesota dairy farm to some pretty big picture questions about the future of the entire industry.
It really shows how interconnected things are.
Yeah.
This isn't just about culling.
Right.
It's about the evolving relationship
between
the dairy and beef industries.
Okay, so let's talk about those dual-purpose breeds.
Okay.
They sound like a potential game changer.
They do.
But how realistic is it for a farmer to switch gears and manage a herd?
Right.
For both milk and beef production.
Yeah.
It seems like it would require a whole different set of skills and resources.
You're right. It's not a simple transition.
Yeah.
Dual-purpose breeds require a different approach.
Okay.
To breeding, feeding, and even marketing.
Right.
For example, you might need to adjust your grazing strategies.
Okay.
To optimize both milk production and weight gain.
Right.
And when it comes to marketing.
Yeah.
You're essentially targeting two different markets.
Right.
With potentially different quality standards.
It sounds like a steep learning curve.
It is.
But also potentially a very rewarding one.
Yeah.
If you can successfully manage a dual-purpose herd,
uh-huh,
you've got a built-in hedge against fluctuations in either the milk or beef market.
Exactly. It's all about diversification and flexibility.
Yeah.
But even if dual-purpose breeds don't become the norm, this focus on cull cow value could still have a ripple effect throughout the dairy industry.
I could see that.
It could change how we evaluate dairy bulls, for example.
Mm-hmm.
Instead of just focusing on milk yield and daughter pregnancy rate, we might start to look more closely at traits that are relevant for beef production, like growth rate and carcass quality.
That's a really important point.
Yeah.
It could shift the entire breeding paradigm.
Wow.
And it might even lead to more collaboration.
Okay.
Between the dairy and beef industries.
Interesting.
Imagine if dairy farmers could partner with beef producers.
Yeah.
To raise those cull calves specifically for the beef market.
Right.
It could be a win-win situation.
Okay, my mind is officially blown.
It's exciting.
We've gone from talking about why a cow gets culled to envisioning a whole new model for the dairy industry.
It's all connected.
It is.
And who knows, maybe someday we'll be talking about dairy-influenced beef as a premium product in grocery stores.
That would be something.
Consumers are increasingly interested in where their food comes from
right,
and how it's produced.
Absolutely.
A story about a cow that lived a good life on a pasture,
mm-hmm.
produced milk,
yeah.
and then contributed to the beef supply chain.
Right.
That's a story that resonates with a lot of
people.
It's
a story that connects us all.
Yeah.
From the farm to the table.
Absolutely.
And I think that's a great place to leave our listeners.
I agree.
With a sense of connection,
mm-hmm.
curiosity,
yeah.
and maybe even a little inspiration.
A little food for thought.
This deep dive has shown us that even something as seemingly straightforward as culling
right.
can open up a world of possibilities.
Absolutely.
Not just for individual farmers, but for the entire food system.
It's a big deal.
So keep those questions coming.
Keep them coming.
Keep exploring.
Yeah.
And keep learning.
Always more to learn.
There's always more to discover.
Absolutely.
And we'll be here to help you dive deeper.
We'll be here.